Good evening, everyone, and welcome. And no, this is not Richard Carey. This is Stephen Whitener again, filling in for Richard Carey on Beyond the Official Narrative. This is hour two of April Friday, April 26th, Beyond the Official Narrative on RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'm blessed to be joined by Casey Whalen and Doug Traubel. And the break cut you off again. It's just as you were going out talking about the fusion centers and all this. And with 1984, that was appropriate. Let me toss it back to you to go ahead and talk about this police state that they're trying to create for us. Yes, sir.
Well, thank you. In answer to Casey's, or to finish answering my question, for Casey is, with the fusion centers, certainly information exchange is important, but I have a distrust of the FBI if they're involved in this. And so, again, if my sergeant or my lieutenant is in charge of the group and making sure that what we're doing is constitutional, that we are addressing, you know, behavior and reasonable suspicion related to actual crimes and not thoughts, because it just seems to me that the lens of the federal government, you look back when the IRS targeted the Tea Party, you look at the DOJ sticking its head in PTA meetings, these kinds of things make me, I'll raise an eyebrow. I'm like, what? Who are we aiming at? Who are we looking at? And so I think as long as my designee is in charge of the unit, then I'm probably have less reservations. But just to write a blank check and cross designate all the members to have jurisdiction throughout the county and just let them run everywhere. No, there has to be some. I will make sure I've got the reins through my designee. My lieutenant or my sergeant to have the reins in his hand.
The police department and sheriff's department has an intelligence analyst, and what role do they play in day-to-day operations from your experience?
Well, the only experience, I'm not sure exactly about that. We have a crime analysis unit, which basically looks at, sort of data-driven patterns of crime, and then you can direct resources to it. The JTTF, for example, is separate from that. You have a crime analysis unit, and that's separate from JTTF. So the crime analysis is more of the kind of typical type calls that a patrol deputy would find himself on: burglary, trespass, graffiti, whatever like that. You can map them out. You can say, okay, we've got a cluster here at these times, these days of the week, since where it's most active. So then you can direct resources. That's a healthy, smart thing. So that's a good way to kind of find out what's happening, where it's happening, how to be creative in the approach. The other stuff where you're talking about multiple agencies sharing information to these fusion centers, I think it's not a bad idea, but again, I have a healthy suspicion of the FBI and its conduct over the years. And I'm not saying they're all bad, but whoever they're charging, whoever they're putting at the sacks, the special agents in charge, they got to be handpicked by higher ups and stand to reason that in this climate we're living in, I'm not so sure their objective is constitutional, or even moral anymore. I just look at again the contrast between this happened with the January 6th people. I look at the Patriot Act. I look at the NDAA. I mean, these are unconstitutional things. The NDAA declares the entire United States a battlefield in the war on terrorism. Well, terrorism is not an enemy. Terrorism is a strategy. So it's such an elastic definition that who are we going to stretch this definition over? I mean, so that goes back to these fusion centers and stuff. Are we using this as a catch-all? Are we going to call this group of people having a conversation a cell? And are we going to, then use the Patriot Act to go into their home, look in their computer, and then give them a national security letter when we leave that says, if you tell anybody we're here, you'll be arrested? I mean, that kind of stuff is unconstitutional. And so I do have concerns about these kinds of cooperative, relationships. Not that cooperation is bad, but again, is it constitutional? I don't want to feed and legitimize something that is tyrannical.
Well, I suspect that since 9/11, there has been a whole other layer of intelligence agency involvement all around us. There was a whole documentary called Shattergate about that and how these IIA operations went on. One of the things that I remember being created was called InfraGuard after 9/11. Now, and supposedly that was to help protect the infrastructure. It just is insidious to me that it, as you've kind of alluded to, it will eventually just be one political police state instead of what the agency or the institution was intended as when it began. And like, we need to go back to simple things, you know. And this, like you said, terrorism, it's a manufactured crisis that they have to protect us from, to give them more power. I mean, at least you sound to me like you want to roll back some of the power of the state here and take back local control, because these people, it's obvious to me that they're not our friends, you know. It's like, they wouldn't be doing these things to people here if they were sending in all of these, you know, waves and waves of people that they just let in. And then it just boggles my mind. These people are not our friends, okay? And I do, like I said, I salute you trying to take that back at the local level. I noticed that we do have a caller already. Let me, let me jump to Mike in Kentucky. Mike, thanks for the call, sir. You have a question for our guests?
Hey, Mike.
Mike, you there, buddy? Uh-oh, I hope that our producer might have stepped away from the board.
There he is.
Okay. Yes, sir, go ahead. Oh, okay, thank you. Go ahead, Doug, and then Mike, whenever you're on, we'll take you too.
Oh, well, just in regard to your comment about the border, I mean, I think, you know, they're just trying to usher in a new majority, you know, kind of Bolshevik soldiers in a way, you know, and it's an act of treason. I mean, treason is defined as the crime betraying one's country, especially by attempting to kill the sovereign or overthrow the government. I mean, certainly betraying one's country to have this open border. This is just reckless. And again, another reason to have a posse, because I only have so many deputies, you know. And so, it's alarming that we are in this place. I never would imagine this in my earlier adult life, but it's pretty clear now that the government wants that is part of this transition. And as I was telling Casey a while back, I don't know if you ever heard of most people have heard of the Bolsheviks, but there were also the Mensheviks. And the Bolsheviks, Bolshevism means majority, and Menshevik means minority. And I was telling Casey, I make a kind of a parallel. I call the rhinos in the Republican Party the Mensheviks. And I call the Democrats the Bolsheviks. And basically both these groups in pre-1917 Russia, prior to the revolution, had the same agenda to eliminate the Tsar regime and the capitalist system and replace it with a communist system. But the difference was the Bolsheviks were violent and they wanted an immediate transition, whereas the Mensheviks were more moderate and they wanted to work within the existing system. And so I can see a parallel there, because you have to ask yourself, you know, why is there no meaningful pushback from the Republican Party on this? Well, it's filled with rhinos, and they're the Mensheviks, the modern-day Mensheviks. And so this is a modern, you know, transformation to some sort of ism state, some sort of authoritarianism, using Marxist strategy and using this sort of somewhat controlled opposition of the rhinos within the Republican Party.
I completely agree. It's like the right boot and the left boot are stomping on us constantly. And like you called it treason, yeah, they're stomping on the country and everybody who lives here and trying to create just such a state. I agree with you completely, sir. And let me say, Mike, are we up, Mike? Did we have Mike in Kentucky now?
I heard the beep. Do you hear me?
Over. There you go. Yes, sir. Great. Come on. You have questions for us, Mike? Howdy.
What's the population of the county you're going into? And that's a loaded question.
No, we got about 515,000. So it's and then we have a neighboring county that's quite large too. So between the two,
my county is 515,000. Do you realize I think the FBI and most of these alphabet agencies are engaged in what I call corruption management. Going by the Bureau of Statistical Analysis, I think it's called, and RAND, and different reports. The so-called underworld, underground economy amounts to about $7,000 in every local economy across this country. So I'm in a college town area, and somebody's going to make money off these drugs. It might as well be us, I think, is the attitude. For, you know, we had a chief deputy that got busted when the sheriff went outside the county to a favorite Frosty Freeze restaurant because he was dumb enough to take a gun with him to take some of the bag money from, you know, payoffs. And so, you know, when you look at that level of corruption, do you think you're going to be able to bring stuff before a fully informed grand jury that's not going to bust little people but go after the big targets that are spinning the wheels on this corruption racket?
Well, how the grand jury works here is the grand jury is controlled by the prosecutor, so we don't have a legitimate, like, I don't know if you've heard of tactical civics before, but tactical civics advances the notion of actual citizen grand jury. We don't have that here, so all I can do is investigate it, send it for review to the prosecutor if she says no, but I'm determined that, hey, look, you're declining prosecution on a solid case here. The only thing I can do is try to shame her publicly and say, hey, we'll take it to the public.
Well, what about the provisions that happened in Oklahoma City? They had a citizens grand jury convened because there was enough, I guess, that petitioned it. Now, that was obviously statewide, and there's, I guess, money in a lot of states sitting there to do this sort of thing. But anyway, I also wanted to mention there's a category 5 tornado just hit Omaha, Nebraska, in the suburbs. 230-mile winds, the first Category 5 tornado in 6 years. So that just hit the news. But
wow.
So prayers out for those folks. But I just realized this the other day and started looking up and trying to put together the math that it looks like on average across this country, a household of four, it's close to $30,000 in the local economy depends on this corrupt underworld. So given the technology that I'm aware of, and Stephen, it goes way back before September 11th, for at least
yes.
My witnesses, cordless phones and so-called cell phones or software-defined radios, the room audio could be listened into, transcribed, and put into these what became known as X-Keyscore or IC-Reach, Stellar Wind, and these different systems that are not actually part of the fusion centers. The fusion centers is a whole other ball of wax. They are based on all of the stupid agreements that we hit and click a little box and says we read and understand all the 40-foot-long terms and conditions and giving away our whatever, our location data or known associates and other granular data. So the fusion centers is kind of a public-private partnership with the various agencies, and William Binney calls it the Planned Perjury Program. And since 2017, he's kind of not held back on just how scrapped the entire legal system is. We can't use the data to defend ourselves, which means there's no equal justice. There's no freedom of association because you go to a church meeting or some, you know, political activist meeting, unless you're like the German government since 2013 and then put your phones in a metal box before you even get to the meeting, they know who's there, you know. They know who's, there's no freedom of association. So that means Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, and Sixth Amendment, in addition to various aspects of the First Amendment, is gone. Have you looked at all that?
No, you're giving me a lot to chew on there, but certainly if you have a phone in your pocket, you've got an FBI agent in your pocket. I mean, I certainly realize that much. You know, you have knowledge on it.
What's that? Mossad. I mean, they're in backdoored into everything, it looks like.
Yeah.
And it took until 2017 for William Binney to finally admit that 20 years earlier, the NSA gave the Talpiot program and Unit 8200, the software to do these sessionizers, and it's just got more and more high resolution after September 11th. They built the empire by orders of magnitude where they're gathering information across all domains on 4.5 billion people on this planet. So that's why there's so many fusion centers and these massive server farms that they're almost the size of a town. They use millions of gallons of water per month. The one in Bluffdale, it's 6 million. It leaked out a few years ago. And it uses at least the electricity of 30,000 homes, just that one. So they keep making them bigger. San Antonio, Fort Meade, Australia, Minwith, they're all over the planet. And that's not even counting the fusion centers. So I've got evidence of it. I went to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Even William Binney's lawyer blew me off. I call it the corruption management system because I think they can tell what public officials are on the take, and they can manage the situation, you know, determine who they're going to use as paid informants or make a deal with, let them keep dealing.
Now, Mike, I have a question for you. Mike, I have a question for you because obviously
sure.
you have a Mike, you have a higher level of knowledge in the technical area than I do. Most people do, for that matter. But with what you're saying, how easy would it be for the same people to create evidence against someone to blackmail them, and they didn't even do it, right? I mean, they could
exactly resort, yeah, right? they can find somebody who's made some salacious or sensational posts on Facebook and then goad them along. They've done that. There was a Christmas tree bomber out in Oklahoma, a young Muslim kid that they ended up giving him money, building a bomb for him, giving him a van, and he drove to the Christmas tree and tried to set off a fake bomb, and they made it, oh, we're the heroes. We stopped it. It's bullcrap. They right. created it.
You're a lot kinder to the FBI than me, Doug. I call them the Federal Bureau of Instigation because that's the kind of thing they've done. And they even had their informant videoing them mixing the first World Trade Center bomb in 93, the explosives up. So, yeah.
Well, since 1997, I started exposing this once I realized what was going on locally here in what I call the targeted town of Kim Davis. And eventually they figured out how to get me under basically a world record fine of $144,000 for an 18-watt local TV station that the owners didn't do all the paperwork on, and the FCC goofed up a bunch of stuff, and I decided to appeal. So because I stood up to them, I got a world record fine. And the FCC's compromised by the cell phone industry probably for decades. They're trying to get rid of local media any way they can. And even statewide, they wanted our Kentucky educational television system to get off of the UHF frequencies so the dang phone companies could have them. So, anyway, it's a lot to it, but you watch your head, man.
Thank you, Mike.
You
I
really
appreciate
are
your
serious
call.
About going up against that. In my little county of 25,000, I think it's over $138 million in underground economy.
Hmm. Wow. Well, I've been
Mike,
down.
Mike, we don't have a show on RBN.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
Guys, I appreciate that.
Good caller.
Go ahead.
He mentioned the grand jury, and like I said, the thing is, we talk about Casey and I can talk about the CSPOA and the importance of the office of the sheriff. If you have a constitutional sheriff who does interpose on overreach, or even tries to make sure that the feds check in with him, that sort of thing. And let's say his bluff is called by some regulatory agent or what have you, and I either arrest or designate my deputy to arrest this person. If the prosecutor, if the county prosecutor, doesn't file charges, I've got an egg on my face. So you need not just a constitutional sheriff, you need a constitutional prosecutor, and a constitutional attorney in general. I mean, because if your prosecutor doesn't help you, maybe usually not, but maybe the attorney general might in a situation like that where you have this conflict between the sheriff and a federal, regulatory agency or federal law enforcement. So, there is this dual sovereignty. Sometimes the feds are superior to the states, and sometimes the states are superior to the federal government. In fact, most of the time, but the lines have become blurred with some of these multi-agency, entities and memorandums of understanding where you're giving authority, you're broadening the authority of like, for example, the Bureau of Land Management. I have every intent to take away the local law enforcement power because they are a regulatory agency. They're not law enforcement. They're armed bureaucrats in police costumes. And why would I make the illegitimate legitimate and expand their powers by giving them a deputy card that allows them now to cite someone into the courthouse locally instead of going through the federal system? I mean, you need sheriffs that have this lens to understand, I mean, I know that I don't have any authority on federal property that's under exclusive control, for example, the federal courthouse or a military base or a post office, right? But most of Idaho's federal land is under what's called proprietary jurisdiction, which means local law enforcement still is primary on those open area, lands. And so, the sheriff needs to understand that, but the prosecutor has to back the sheriff when he is flexing, not out of arrogance, but out of necessity to protect the people from overreach.
Great point. And if you have Soros has bought your prosecutor, then you're up against that. Yeah. That it's a daunting task that you're taking on. Like I said, I salute you, and I echo what Mike said. Watch your back, because you're their worst nightmare in some degree. And hey, we have some more callers. Let me go next to David in California. David, thank you for the call, sir.
Yeah, this should be pretty fast. Thank you for coming on the show. They're having this, I forgot what you call it, it's just like boycott and divest Israel and stuff. What would you do with people peacefully protest with that's their stance?
Well, if they're peaceful protesting the First Amendment issue, I mean, not nothing. I mean, I might have a presence just to, you know, try to, you know, deter
That pretty much answered my question. Because many people, yeah. Well, I'll just make a comment. Many people I went to Liberty Party, like mostly conservative people the other night, but they're just, some of them people are saying death to Israel, which to me is a borderline, because if you call upon violence with the First Amendment. But I was like, they had this thing. I was really concerned because a lot of conservative people buy into that, right? And you don't seem like you did, which is good. I mean, I buy into the First Amendment, not... But if you provoke violence or seems intentional doing that, then that's a different story. But if you break someone or hit someone, or someone on the right wing hit someone, a left wing or whatever, it's supposed to be a peaceful.
Right.
What peaceful people should do, whether on the left or right, if they say they are, is that any throw a stone or out a window or hit the people on the opposite side or a policeman, you're going, we're going to get a citizen's arrest. But anyways, you answered my question, and thank you for knowing that by now.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave. I'll add one thing to that. Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights are nonpartisan, in my view. So, I disagree with the premise behind Black Lives Matter, but I will defend their First Amendment right to protest. Now, when a protest turns into a riot, that's a different situation, which I think is David's point. So you have to have the maturity to understand, a leader needs to have the maturity to understand that. Make sure you are being objective in the protection of people's rights. But
Black Lives Matter and Antifa should be actually protesting to get Stuart Rhodes out, because he's standing up for everybody. Everybody's right. What I mean by that is he's standing up for their right to protest, but not violently.
Yeah,
so people, that was their whole beef, police abuse. Well, you're against police abuse. I'm against police abuse. Everybody there, mostly everybody in RBA is against police abuse. So, I mean, I don't get it that they don't see that. Anyways. I have enough time. I don't want to keep taking it. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks very much for the call, David. And
okay,
next
thanks,
is
David.
Bang Bang Houston. Bang Bang. Thanks for the call, sir.
Yes. I'm from Houston.
Yes, sir.
I don't know.
Question or comment for our guests?
I mean, what he said, I kind of agree with him. But everything, I think you have riot in this. Every college, some of them pro-Palestinian, some of them pro-Jewish. And that is kind of like very tricky, because Palestinian killing all the Jew, and the Jew now killing all the Palestinian. The war never ends. And America, they don't want it to get involved, because they don't want it to get that thing. And Iranian attacking Israel, I think Middle East is in the middle of chaos. And Biden, he didn't do enough to take care of the mess. And then the election coming...
Yes, sir. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say that there's something going on in the college campuses all around, that they're protesting this issue. And yeah, let me let you finish your question, sir. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, the protest if it comes in the United States, started in Colombia, and then now in L.A., in Austin, in Houston, and then 90% of the protest is pro-Palestinian, trying to stop Israel killing the Palestinian, and Israel protested trying to get the people who get kidnapped released from Hamas. So it's kind of like mess. And American, he didn't try hard enough to try to stop the war. But the war is going to be on and people dying. And the only thing is, I'm Jewish control, a lot of rich Jewish, a lot of money, they control American government. So American government, yeah, no choice, like pro-Israel.
That, you bring up a good question too, sir. Let me, a lot, especially after 9/11, a lot of local law enforcement was sent to be trained in Israel. Let me ask you to comment on that, Doug. Do you think that should be taking place?
You're saying local law enforcement, to your knowledge, has been trained on this international.
Some
topic.
People have been. They've actually. Well, yeah, they have actually been. Some of them have been to Israel to be trained. I remember seeing a lot of stories about that, as well as. The training that they received, I have been told, by it pretty much puts the citizen, the person that they, as the adversary, it's very much a military style approach, I guess. I'll just put it that way. That seeing everyone as a potential terrorist, a Palestinian, or so to speak. The caller really brings up a good point there. I'll let you respond to both of those if you'd like.
Well, I'm unaware of any, training going on like that, where American officers are going there to be trained. That's why I learned something from you. But regarding this broader issue of the protesters, whether it be college campuses or the streets of New York, what have you, it's important that a sheriff recognizes you're confronting behavior, not ideology. Like I said earlier in the hypothetical, I disagree with the entire premise behind, Bureau of Land Management. I mean, yeah, that too. Black Lives Matter and Bureau of Land Management also is another gang. But Black Lives Matter and Antifa, I disagree with their premise altogether. But you know what? They're going to peacefully demonstrate, and I have my opinions on all kinds of, international issues. But those can't cloud my judgment when it comes time to defending the rights of people to protest. I may not like you or what you stand for, but you know what? You have rights that are protected by the state constitution and the U.S. Constitution to peacefully protest. When it's no longer peaceful, then we're going to step in. And so my lens is just in terms of like minority. There's only one minority in this country, constitutionally speaking. That's the individual. The individual is the minority. All this talk about group rights over individual rights, it's dangerous. And of course, you do have these polarizing topics like the Palestinians and Israel, and so I realize that's going to have a consequence on the streets of America. But we need to be objective in our enforcement and look at behavior. Same thing when you're on patrol.
Hey,
like I
there's
said
the bottom of the hour break. That was a great comment, sir. I really like what you said that about the individual being the ultimate minority. We'll be right back after the break, folks.
Gun 2, trainable, Prox, target 140, 530 meters, Wizzo ready.
Scissor confirms.
Arm 2.
Gun 2 armed.
Gun ready.
Rounds away.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Those are brutal. Cannon. Hey, welcome back, y'all. You're listening to Beyond the Official Narrative. I'm Stephen Whitener, filling in for Richard Carey. It's Friday, April the 26th, 2024. And thanks for that call, Bang Bang. Appreciate that, your input, sir. Next up, we have Lynn in Maryland. Lynn, you have a question or comment?
Hey, we kicked you off.
Pardon?
Thank you very much, Stephen. And
there
and
we go.
Guests. Thank you. Great show. Appreciate it. Have you seen any of the footage or information about Emory University? They're they're down in Atlanta. And actually, and don't think I'm against policing. I'm not against policing, okay? This is what happened one other time. But that is where they're going to build that cop city thing. The police department and I think the state police, or maybe Atlanta police, they've been trained by IDF. They were holding down an Emory student, repeatedly tasing him in the leg. A professor, of the chair of the philosophy that actually started to film it, and they grabbed her. They've just had a fit. And they've treated students, they've used rubber bullets, tear gas on students. Now, I had a fit with Mike Johnson yesterday or the day before when he was up there in New York spouting his lies that came out of the New York Times about, you know, beheaded babies and babies in ovens. And, you know, that story, the New York Times has never retracted it, and it was a poor source, and it wasn't verified, and the Israeli government is great at fake photos and videos. They lie like rugs. But I called him. And I, you know, I'm like, stop it. What are you trying to get another Kent State? Remember when Kent State and the other university down there, I think in Mississippi, when that violence happened in the Vietnam War, we didn't have police that had been militarized. I mean, that was an accident that National Guard or something went off there at Kent State. But think about what police can do today, and especially if they're already trained as military. You know, that's what the IDF, I mean, the last thing in the world we need is the friggin' Israeli government in our backyard. Those people are the terrorists, and I've been saying it down on Capitol Hill now for almost 7 months, because I can tell you who the terrorists are. And that's the Zionist government of Israel is running that show, and they're slaughtering and massacring innocent people that are not terrorists. They just want to survive. They probably never even wanted Hamas, you know, who were they left with? Mm. So, you know, we need to stand up for each other and speak up, because innocent people are getting hurt. There's nothing wrong with demonstrations at colleges. We've been doing that for 30, 40 years. I'm almost 70. I remember Vietnam. You know, you'd think they would have had a ceasefire before spring break. That's what I would have suggested. You know, because what do you think people are going to do this time of year? They're going to demonstrate. I mean, it's just a given, and we have freedom of speech so far. Kind of, sort of, except we have to deal with rubber bullets and tear gas and batons and tasers now. And that's just not fair. You know, and it's not about left or right. And it's about being humane. Okay, thank you for letting me
vent. Thanks for the call, Lynn. Let me let you respond, Doug. And the militarization of police, I mean, you talked about training reserves for riot duty, not having a SWAT team on standby. I got to salute you for that, too. It's just that people need to take a breath, but I agree with what she's saying. I remember I was very young. I'm going to be 64, but I remember Kent State happened, and it the country almost came apart. So let me let you respond to that, sir.
Well, you know, the public trust is fragile. Every contact, police contact, enforcement actually either builds or erodes that public trust. It's fragile and it's precious. So force always needs to be measured, of course. Now there's sort of a boys and their toys sort of a thing in these agencies with SWAT teams. I'm not opposed to having a SWAT team, but I'm opposed to the overuse of them. You know, when I was in San Diego, I was on a team. Our armored vehicle had a trap door in the bottom. We never had to use it, but the purpose of it was, in theory, if somebody was in a active fire area, we could drive, you know, over them and then pull them through the door for rescue. And we did have some calls where we needed some of the gear that we had, but we had mature leadership, so we weren't overusing it. I have seen a number of cases in the news where the teams are used unnecessarily, and it goes back to the public trust is fragile and a measured force. And so I'm not against them. I'm against the overuse of them. We had a case in my jurisdiction a couple of years ago where it was used unnecessarily, in my view. It was domestic violence. The deputies responded. They got the female half and another person out of the apartment. The suspect was inside. He was said by the female who was debriefed that he may have a gun and he may be suicidal, but there's no one else in there but him. So my mature leadership would have just said, okay, we've got the two other people safe. Let's just put a posse member on it from a safe distance. And when the guy comes out, call deputies and they'll try to avoid a pursuit, like stay far behind him, kind of follow him when he parks somewhere, then take him down there. There's no need to escalate. They called a SWAT team out, had traffic shut down for like 8 hours. It was the overuse of this, of a team. It's not necessary. There's no imminence. There's no danger anymore. You know, it was mitigated because good verbal skills got the two people out. There was no danger to the rest of the apartment complex. He wasn't threatening to shoot, you know, or you know, fire shots wildly around. He probably, sisters like that, usually they drink themselves to sleep or they shoot themselves. You know, so when you use a team, you're actually putting the officers in danger too. If the guy might have a gun and you're entering, well, might he shoot the officer? I mean, why am I going to expose my officers or the suspect to danger when there's the potential for victims has been removed by removing those two people? He's the only one left in the apartment. So maturity would dictate, okay, let's just sit on the house for a while. If enough time goes by, we can get a warrant and arrest him a couple of days later. There's no urgency anymore. So I'm not opposed to the existence of them. I am opposed to the overuse of them through immature leadership, which damages the public trust.
That's a great quote too. That like you write that I like the way you put that, sir. And I have to agree with that part. But you know, it has been a trend across the country that we have had a lot of money thrown at them. You know, you mentioned that armored personnel care, but tons of those have come into local law enforcement since 9/11 and stuff. And I think that's a really bad sign that they planning on something coming, you know, something coming up where they plan to use them, and it's not going to be to protect the local population, I'm afraid. But that's a whole other topic. But I would vote if I was able to vote for you, for the sheriff up there, you would get mine, sir. And next up, I have Gregory in California.
Hello,
Gregory. Howdy. Thanks for the call, sir.
And thank you for taking it, by golly. Question. If I'm listening to RBN and I notice a crime that they're committing outside of your jurisdiction and I report it, what could you do to help to facilitate a right out of the wrong that has been done? Yeah, sure.
I think your volume's low. Are you asking me if a crime out of my jurisdiction occurs that I become aware of, and presumably the jurisdiction where it happened isn't doing anything about it, what can I do? Is that your question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I don't have where my jurisdiction ends, my influence can continue. So obviously, I could call the sheriff over there, make sure he's aware of it, and say, sheriff to sheriff, you know, we are the people's guardian. We're the chief law enforcement officers of the county. You know, sheriff, are you aware that this happened? I mean, make sure the sheriff is in, let's say, within a city jurisdiction in a neighboring county. Well, the sheriff has jurisdiction in the cities as well. So if it was a city that wasn't doing what they should do, and I look into it a little bit, and then I call the sheriff over there, I mean, I don't want to, you know, be arrogant or disrespectful, but I think I have a duty to at least inform, you know, when I have the knowledge, the neighboring sheriff, and encourage him to look into the matter and assert his authority if necessary. I mean, at least a phone call to the chief and say, hey, I either you look into this or I'm going to look into this, you know, sort of shame him into, you know, doing the right thing.
Well, what if it goes in the federal jurisdiction where we know that these FBI and alphabet soup kind of critters are doing all sorts of unlawful things? You know, they're legal because it's man-made law. But law, what I'm trying to get at, too, is are you one for law or legal? And do you know the difference?
Well, law, man, well, you can tell me. I would answer that question. The highest law, of course, is the Constitution. You know, I mean, legal is not necessarily the law. I mean, you could say that the fact these bureaucratic agencies will say, oh, regulations are legal because they're passed through a process. Well, they're not lawful because they violate the Commerce Clause, you know, which is the most disputed clause in the Constitution that erects these multitude of alphabet agencies you're referring to. And so you have to measure everything by the fixed standard of the Constitution. And if you have illegal, or maybe they will say legal, but unlawful conduct going on, then there's a need to interpose. And what falls apart, though, sometimes when you interpose is when the prosecutor or the attorney general doesn't back you up. You know, and so am I answering your question?
Yeah, you're getting real darn close. Thank you so much. But I do have a problem with law enforcement or legal color of law enforcement that is prevalent running around throwing out all this legalese and trying to make me conform to it, which is not lawful because
administrative state.
You mentioned that earlier, Doug. What did you call them? I forgot. Yes, sir.
They're armed bureaucrats wearing police costumes.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So I think he agrees with you. Yep. Well, thanks very much for the call. I don't mean to cut you off, but I have three more. Thanks very much for the call, Gregory. Next is Lark in Texas. Hello, Lark. Howdy. Thanks for calling, sir.
Well, thanks for taking the call. I just thought I'd take a minute to maybe parry a little bit with Mr. Casey there.
Hey, brother.
Are you aware, sir, of GENSA?
TENSA?
Yeah, it's GINSA. It's the Jewish Institute of National Security Affairs, GENSA.org.
Okay.
They inaugurated something called the LEAP program, L-E-E-P, which is the Law Enforcement Exchange Program. Now, remember, in the aftermath of 9/11, the Israeli IDF had been branding itself as the Harvard University of Anti-Terrorism. And so what they did is they inaugurated the Law Enforcement Exchange Program, okay, which meant that chiefs of police and their deputies and the sheriffs and their deputies across the country were provided two-week vacations, you know, all expenses paid to Israel so they could learn how to, police those terrorists. And so that the American law enforcement could be trained in the art of treating Americans like the Israelis do Palestinians. And very few people even talk about this anymore because it's kind of old news. You know, 9/11 happened quite a long time ago. But however, in the run-up to 9/11, which is an entirely manufactured event, and since that time we've learned a lot about who was behind it and what the reasonings were and everything else, although it's never reported to the average rank-and-file American that watches TV, you had people like Herman Goldstein and his POP program, Problem-Oriented Policing, which is based on the broken window theory. And then you had people like Martin Seligman and his learned helplessness theory. And then you had actual hired consultants beyond these university professors that were hired. And they included Marcus Wolf of the East German Stasi and Evgeny Primakov, the former Soviet spy chief, to create this new agency called the Department of Homeland Security. And so that's why today all law enforcement agencies in this country, that's the sheriffs, municipal police, this is the Highway Patrol, Border Control, TSA, you name it, all comes under the aegis of the Department of Homeland Security. And guess what kind of law enforcement they enforce? But communitarian law. And this is something that's never talked about, but it's a fact. It's borne out with innumerable facts, you know, based in law and history. And so I'm curious if you know about any of this stuff.
Thanks for the call, Lark. Let me let Doug respond. I don't mean that. I really appreciate you bringing out that about the program, the LEAP program. That's what I was referring to earlier, I believe. Go ahead, sir.
I took some notes while he was talking because much of what he said I was unaware of. I am aware of the DHS influence on local law enforcement because, in fact, in my book I have a flyer that was put up at the sheriff's office when I was there, and it was a flyer for training, and it was on there. It says, funded by, hosted by whatever, the DHS. So we have federal monies coming in. I can't remember the topic right now. I have to thumb through the book to find it. But I know that there is an influence on local law enforcement. monies spent on training local agencies on selective, topics. But what he talked about this GINSA and this law enforcement exchange program, I'm not aware of that. I wrote it down. I'll look up that. I wrote down the website. So very interesting.
Yes, absolutely. And next up, I have Chance in West Virginia. I'm going to try to get to everybody. Can you make it quick, Chance? Thanks for the call, sir. I got a couple more.
Hello, Stephen. Did I hear correctly? Your guest is running for sheriff under the Constitution Party banner?
Yes, sir. I believe that's right. The way that it's going to end up. He believes that in November that he will be, at least.
Well, the Constitution
I'm not sure if the
Party,
other details. Yeah.
Constitution Party is the only party I vote for. If they're not on a ballot for any office, I just don't vote. I've gotten to that point. And we got to understand the last thing the establishment wants is a Constitution Party winner in an election. Let's face it. I mean, they'll throw everything at you. You got to be prepared for it, including funding your opponent tremendously. Have you taken that into consideration? Doug is your name?
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. Yes, I have. And you're absolutely right. I mean, they don't want someone who's going to push back against, unconstitutional actions. I mean, just for example, real quick, when COVID was here, we had people denied entry at the courthouse because they wouldn't wear a mask. And then they were arrested for failure to appear and dragged to the same door without a mask. They were denied entry, which is a violation of the state constitution, Article 1, Section 18. So someone like me who can quote the state constitution and will train their officers to take that citizen arm in arm and deliver them to the courtroom, because my oath is not to the administrative judge who has this ridiculous order to wear a mask. My oath is to the constitution, and I'm defending the citizen's right, and so my deputies will be instructed to act constitutionally and view the contact through a constitutional lens. And you're right, they don't want someone like me who's going to buck the system.
Of course not. Yeah. Right, they're going to throw everything at you that they possibly can, or even steal the election from you. Let's face it. I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a moment. I'm finding it very discouraging voting nowadays. Even though I'm a Constitution Party, I support them 100%. But the way I see it is that in this climate we live in now, where not one single person is being brought up for the crime of high treason on all these different levels, I find it hard, almost impossible to believe that we're going to make any headway. And I hate to sound pessimistic, but I'd like your comment on that, sir.
Well, I certainly, share your concerns. I get a little, depressed, but I've got friends that stay positive, and they assure me that there's going to be things are going to change. And I hope they're right. Their sources are different than mine, and they keep me a little bit upbeat because, I don't fear is the enemy, and braver people than me fought for this country, and it's my turn to stand up. And I'm going to try to carve out a little piece to stand on and push back, and I hope courage is contagious. I mean, I totally understand your cynicism, I guess, because I fall victim of that too. But I get fortified sometimes by my friends to stay positive and a belief in God. And so I'm just going to, just keep filling the air with uppercuts.
Bless you, sir, and my best of luck to you now.
Thanks a lot for the call, Chance. I appreciate it. The ground upon which you stand is a liberated zone. Defend it with your life is a saying of mine. And Misty in Kansas is next. Misty, thank you for the call.
Hi, yes, and great show. So I would like your guest. So he stands on the Bill of Rights. You do, I'm sorry, your name, Doug?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Doug, so you do understand the Bill of Rights, the supreme law of the land. It was the First Amendment to the Constitution. My question to you is what is your understanding of the 9th and the 10th article in the Bill of Rights?
Well, the 9th Amendment, I refer to that often when I talk about jury nullification. The 9th Amendment is to the people, what the 10th Amendment is to the states.
The 9th Amendment says the government has no jurisdiction over the people. So you don't understand the Bill of Rights. You do not.
Well, I do. That's what I'm saying is to you, I think we're saying the same
thing. Repeat it to me. What is the 9th article, sir?
I can't quote it to you. What I'm telling you is the Ninth Amendment is to the people.
It's an article.
Yeah.
Then you really don't understand all this. There was a constitution then, which is BS. We know that. But attached to that was the First Amendment. Go back to original documents. And it had 10 articles. What? It's not your First Amendment. It's your first article. Now, if you go down to the 9th and 10th,
I'm sorry to cut you off, Misty. There's a lot of things you're saying there that I do agree with the basis of the Constitution. I have one more caller I want to try to get to before we run out of time. I apologize for cutting you off. But Jerry in Chicago, you're the last guy I managed to get everybody in. Go ahead, sir. You have a comment as well. We have Jerry in Chicago.
Oh, hey.
There he is. Hello, Jerry. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, but you know what? I got to ask the sheriff right here. I live in Crooked County, Illinois, and my county sheriff is Tom Dart, and he answers to whoever pays his check. I mean, he's definitely unconstitutional, but you know what? I've noticed, and I joined CSPOA. I'm not law enforcement or anything else like that. It was like a honorary membership, I don't know, $75 a year or something like that. I forget what it was. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've noticed in Illinois we have about 104, 105 counties. That there's more and more sheriffs signing up for CSPOA compared to like 8-10 years ago when there was like 8 out of 104. Now they're up to about 17 or 18 or 19, which is, I think, pretty good. So, hey, that's all I wanted to let you guys in on. And, hey, I enjoyed your show. It was very enlightening.
Yes.
So you guys have a great weekend.
Thanks for the call, Jerry. And yes, I enjoyed having you guys on very much. Thank you for joining me, Doug. It was a terrific show. Thanks, as always, Casey. And let me let you give out your website one more time as we go off, sir.
Oh, thank you. For my campaign, it's DougForSheriff.com. My last name is spelled T-R-A-U-B-E-L, Trouble, Doug Trouble, DougForSheriff.com.
And go ahead.
I was say you can find my work on Twitter, Casey_Whalen, WHALEN, Substack, CaseyWhalen.substack.com, and Rumble, North Idaho Exposed. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Casey. You do great work, too. That was you brought out some good things in here that you've gotten with the public records request and stuff. You guys support Casey, too, if you can. And listen, thanks again for joining me, Doug. This has been Beyond the Official Narrative. As Mr. Carey says, transcend the construct. Regards.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.